Next Monday will mark the centenary of the birth of a true great of English literature and philosophy. Iris Murdoch was born in Phibsborough in Dublin 7 on January the 15th, 1919. And over the coming days, a series of events will take place to celebrate her life and legacy. Local historian John Seary has been involved in putting on some of those events. John is with me now alongside Dr. Danielle Petterbridge of the UCD School of Philosophy. And Danielle is currently working on a project to commemorate Iris Murdoch's contribution to philosophy. Thank you both for coming in. Danielle, of course we know Iris Murdoch as the great novelist, but how important is she seen to be as a philosopher?
Yes, Iris Murdoch is a very significant philosopher, and perhaps she has, her philosophy has been a little bit overshadowed, as you mentioned, because she's so well known as a great novelist. But she's particularly significant as a philosopher in her own right, but also as a female philosopher. And in terms of her philosophy, some of her important ideas are particularly to do with the notion of ethics and morals. And in that sense, this is why the project that I'm working on is connected to the UCD Ethics Centre in public life. And why her work is particularly significant is because often philosophical ideas are seen to be quite abstract and removed from everyday life. Things about what is reality, what is time. And Murdoch was very significant because of the way in which she tried to connect philosophy to everyday life. So she wanted to be able to blend her philosophy with everyday experience, lived experience. And that was significant at the time because she went to Oxford in 1938, to Oxford University, to study philosophy. And at the time, of course, it was the Second World War and many of the men had been conscripted. And I think what's significant is that because of that, she perhaps had an experience at Oxford University in philosophy that she may not have had otherwise if the war hadn't intervened.
Do you mean they were more practical in their approach?
Well, it's
or practical application maybe to daily life.
It's also because, yes, they got to explore different ways of doing philosophy. Before the war, philosophy was being done in a particular style that's associated with Anglo-American philosophy, which was seen to be abstract and perhaps based on quite abstract moral principles. And she wanted to think about particularly with the war as well, the experience of the Holocaust and the way in which we're confronted with, you know, issues of goodness and evil. How can we, when it looks as though any notion of morality or ethics has been annihilated with that experience, and in an era that's coming out of the Enlightenment ideas with basically a questioning of religion as a moral ballast, what can we look to reorientate our moral principles? And she was able to do that in a way which was very unique because she drew together from different philosophical backgrounds. She drew from the ancient Greeks, particularly from Plato, to effectively reconstruct a notion of moral good. And so it was in some ways quite controversial because at the same time she also was very interested by French existentialism, the work of Jean-Paul Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir in particular. And she
would
was,
that not seem the opposite?
Exactly. It did seem like the opposite. So she's quite unique in that she was also one of the first in the English-speaking world to introduce Sartre to an English readership. And what she was particularly intrigued by Sartre because on the one hand, he was able to, in his own literature and philosophy, construct an idea of philosophy that was connected to everyday life, to lived experience, a philosophy that anyone could live by, that someone could pick up a novel by Beauvoir or Sartre and connect to that philosophy. But she was troubled in some ways by the fact that the Enlightenment heritage and leading through to the existentialists based their philosophy on a notion of radical individual freedom, a notion that's basically
people can be feckless about life.
That they can, but also that a sense of meaninglessness and that the individual is responsible for constructing their own life, shaping their own life, and the architect of their own values.
But if she was interested in goodness then, could she separate goodness from an idea of Christian goodness or religion?
That's an excellent question. She was very interested then in an era in which we are potentially faced with many people giving up on religion and religious faith. What do we do? What do we turn to have an equivalent idea of God that is not necessarily based in the Christian religion. And so she turns back to Plato, to the ancient philosophers, to reconstruct a notion of the good, which can in some ways is a transcendent notion of the good that effectively challenges that basic notion of individual radical freedom that had become so prominent, because her worry was that it didn't give enough regard to others. And she was looking for a unified ethical approach rather than a particularistic one.
And it is about giving people enough attention and in order to see, is it the good in them, rather than dismissing them by any notions we might have ourselves.
Absolutely. So this is where she does connect her philosophy to everyday life, because it is about, particularly for her, she developed a notion of moral vision based on this notion of goodness. And her idea is that a good person will look carefully and lovingly and justly and with attention at both the other, at both the world, at others, and also at art, because art was very important to her. And through effectively being able to strip back your preconceived notions and ideas and beliefs and conventions, and being much more attentive to the other, one can, of course, come to a greater understanding of both the other and also of the world.
Fascinating. John, you are based in Dublin 7 and you have taken on Iris to celebrate this centenary. But you're interested in her in the midst of other artists and writers from the area.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened approximately a year ago, where we're looking at the history of the area in terms of how we're going to rejuvenate Dorset Street. And I had a chat with some locals and we talked about Joyce, we talked about O'Casey, we talked about other figures, including Brinsley Sheridan. And one of my neighbours said, Murdoch. And I was completely shocked. I couldn't understand where this name had just been thrown in there. And I do recall Murdoch from a long time ago about her being a prolific writer and so on, but I had no idea she was from Dublin. So did a bit more digging. And the more I found out about her, the more compelling her story became. And rather than just let the centenary pass by, I got all the writers from the area together, assembled them together, and seen there was a lot of connections between them, but also a lot of very interesting aspects of them. And not only had they got the actual interest aspects in terms of their backgrounds, but also the connections that were there. There were fascinating connections there.
So just give us a little bit about her connection with the Dublin 7. I mean, she's born there.
She's born, as you say, in 59 Blessington Street. Even though she left the area apparently when she's one, she still refers to the area a lot throughout her life, in terms of both returning back to visit on her holidays, but also she had referred to it in her novels as well, which is quite interesting. In The Red and the Green, which is one of her novels that refers to Ireland directly, Blessington Street itself is indirectly referred to in the novel, but also she refers to the land of her birth in another novel, The Unicorn, that she wrote. And a lot of her writings also are peppered with reference to Irish names, Irish place names. So, you know, she hasn't forgotten her Irishness, and she clearly was Irish, and she believed she was Irish.
And the other writers you're talking about from the area, Brendan Behan, Oliver St. John Gogarty, Sheridan, the playwright Sean O'Casey.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that, including Joyce as well, who lived in the area, you know, like Iris, a lot of them had difficulties with their heritage. They said, like, we're Irish, but, you know, maybe there's aspects to Ireland we don't like. And that has been confused as well, like not liking being Irish. No, they did like being Irish, but didn't like everything about Ireland. And I look at Iris in the same light. She grew up in Ireland just till she was one, until she left. But obviously, she considered herself Irish. She saw a lot of what's happening in Ireland during the Troubles. That had rankled with her, obviously, and that had affected her outlook in Ireland. But she still maintained that she was Irish, and she still maintained until she died that she was Irish.
Danielle, her novels, is there any overlap between her philosophy and her novels?
Yes, this is a question that can raise quite a lot of debate, because depending on who you ask, whether it might be Peter Conradi or Martha Nussbaum, some thinkers will say that the philosophy and the literature are separate. But I think that there's an important case to be made for the fact that although Murdoch is not sort of effectively putting forward a philosophical doctrine in the novels, that she's definitely exploring philosophical ideas that you also find in her philosophical work. And in that sense, particularly many of her novels, such as the Booker Prize-winning The Sea, and also her very first novel, Under the Net. Both of them explore often those issues of the good person or goodness through the reverse, by effectively constructing a character who's egotistical, who's selfish, who's individualistic, and certainly the main character, Charles, in The Sea is certainly that kind of character who goes, you know, who's a theatre director who decides that he's going to buy a house next to the sea and learn to be good.
But he's far from good.
And in that sense, there's some lovely passages in that work in which you see him with a magnifying glass going around trying to look more closely at things such as herbs and pebbles and sea worms. But clearly, because he's so enveloped in his own egotistical world, which is something Murdoch explores in her philosophy, he's unable to see reality and differentiate between reality and illusion. And he's also not able to reorientate him to others, himself to others' perspectives, other ways of viewing the world. So in that sense, it's definitely the case that although we wouldn't want to say the philosophy should be overly read into the novels, that she is definitely exploring those ideas. And in the first novel, Under the Net, very much influenced, it appears, by Sartre's work, for example, in Nausea, where there's this existential individualistic hero who's wandering around London, who has no connection to others and also no sense of reality. So in that sense, it's clear that she had very much a sense that art was crucial for being able to reveal a sense of goodness and what was the opposite of goodness.
Now, John, there are lots and lots of events on.
So many.
How can people find out what's on in the Dublin 7 area to commemorate and celebrate Iris Murdoch?
If you do a Google search for Iris Murdoch 100, you will see the link to our Facebook page. But also, just to draw to your attention, the Iris Breakfast we're having on Saturday, that's going to be the launch of a commemorative booklet, and everyone is welcome to that.
Okay, but they can find all the details on your Facebook page.
Absolutely, yes.
I've been speaking to Dr. Danielle Petterbridge of the UCD School of Philosophy and Dublin 7 historian John Seary about the life and work of Iris Murdoch, marking the centenary of her birth, which falls on July 15th, that's next Monday.